What's going on, McAllen, Texas? Welcome to episode 79 of season 5 of Talking Throws podcast. Episode 78 of season 5, Talking Throws podcast, Texas style. I'm Coach Jason.
And I'm Coach Janelle.
And as y'all already know, we are throws coaches with the track club, the Thorn Factory. You can go to that website, thethornfactory.com, to check out our bios. Let everybody know that we've done some changing to the website, so that's got to be updated pretty soon. So if you want to check out the new site, just go to thethornfactory.com. Remind everybody about Coach Kai and Coach Jarvis. They're still looking for throwers. They're still doing lessons. If you're in the greater western Fort Worth or the great eastern part of Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, reach out to Coach Jarvis. If you're in the greater Abilene area out in West Texas, reach out to Coach Morgan Knight. He is running Knight Power and Performance. Remind everybody, too, about our YouTube channel. Give us a thumbs up or thumbs down on YouTube. Also, too, our shopping pages has some updates of new apparel. You can find the Lifting DFW shirt on there, or the iHammer Not MC on there as well. So please go help us with the purchase. And the money goes to a good cause, and it helps with our travel and all our expenses and anything like that. Without our sponsors, we can't do what we do. We have to thank them. Our sponsors for season 5, Texas Track and Field Coach Association, ttfca.org, for the latest news in Texas track and field. That's ran by Stuart Canner. Meets have already been posted for 2023. So if you're looking for a meet, want to post a meet and schedule a meet, reach out to Stuart and he will get it on the site. Fourthrows.com, quality implements priced right. Go to fourthrows.com, use the code TalkingThrows10 to get 10% off. Fourthrows.com, TalkingThrows10 to get 10% off. Porta-Circle, making throwing more accessible. Go to porta-circle.com, use the code TalkingThrows10. Guys, if you're looking to get extra reps in your garage or in a gym or a school hallway or underneath a football bleachers, that is a great tool to use. Easy to assemble, very heavy weight, so the wind won't pick it up and blow it off. They got shot put rings, discus rings, or even a hammer circle as well. So also, Ready Up Athletic Development offers everything you need in semi-private, private strength conditioning in the greater Austin area. Contact Zach Phillips at 512-507-8347, or you can follow him on social media on Instagram and Facebook at Ready Up, or you can go to his website, readyupad.com. And then we appreciate all the likes that for Bruce's podcast 2 weeks ago went really well. And, you know, we got a lot of likes for that. So go to that website, fibersportsdiscus.com. New way to get the distance out. And if you're looking for a good disc, whether you're a junior high, boy or girl, a high school, collegian, or even a professional, fiber sports is the way to go. It's changing the way we look at rim weights. Today's guest is a really amazing. I'm excited to have her on. She's a current throws coach at University of Texas at Rio Grande Valley in Edinburgh, Texas. She was a four-time Olympian in 2004. 2008, 2012, and in 2016. She made the finals in 2004 and 2016. She was a NCAA champion in the shot put in 2002. She's a three-time NCAA All-American. She hails from the country of Trinidad and Tobago. Please welcome to the Talking Throws podcast, episode 78, Cleopatra Burrell.
How are you guys today?
We're well. We've had a lazy Sunday. Nothing going on. No track. So it's kind of been, we're kind of in a little bored. We're used to doing something every weekend. But then all of a sudden when we have a couple of weekends where we're not doing anything, we're like, man, I need something to do. So.
Well, I tried. He said he was bored. I had a honey-do list of lots of things at home. But he was,
I know.
He was not that bored.
No.
Yeah, I was like, I got lots of things you can do. But his idea of bored was not that. He found, he left.
So he did, yeah.
Do my list of honey-do items.
I'll catch him, and my goal is to do them all by in the next year.
So. Okay.
Not happening.
Well, Well, Coach, thank you so much for being on. I am so excited to have you on because you are the legend of all legend when it comes to throwing professionally. And we want to hear your story, and we're excited that you're in Texas and coaching now. So, but we're going to start it off currently. You just got named the throws coach at University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley. What's been going on so far since you got named the throws coach?
Well, we brought in a whole new crew of athletes that I'm really excited to be having.
Okay.
First of all, we have a number of our local area girls joining the team next year. Then we have two transfers, one formerly from Tennessee, and we have a graduate student coming in from UC Davis.
Oh, wow.
And we have an international girl coming in from Sweden.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, we're really excited about that. On the men's team, we have our current athlete, Julian, and he's in the javelin. So that's where we are on the men's side. So we're looking to build the men's side. But I think we did a really great job with the women this year in terms of recruiting. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm kind of curious, first question is, how do you juggle recruiting somebody from Sweden and bringing them into the Valley in Texas versus recruiting somebody, you know, right up the road?
Right. You know, the kids in the area, there are so many opportunities for them here at UTRGV. So it's really about finding the kids that have the passion, that want to learn, and giving them an opportunity. Because my story really begins with a coach giving me a chance to walk onto the team. So in terms of our roster limits, I encourage, invite, and welcome basically all the young ladies from this area who would like to try the throwing events or who have experience with it, really willing to make that investment in the community. And in terms of going as far as Sweden, as a former international athlete, I have, you know, some experience with that as well. So I felt really comfortable in both areas.
Gotcha. Awesome. Gotcha. So Coach Hicks is the head coach there right now?
Yes, she is. Yeah.
Okay. And how long has she been on board there?
She's been here. I think she's approaching 1 year. Yeah. Okay. So I came on in January and she came on the summer prior to my arrival.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. So what conference are y'all in?
We are in the WAC Western Athletic Conference.
Oh, y'all are in the WAC. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the school population?
Ooh, I don't know. Already.
All right. Next question.
We're a smaller school. I would say in terms, you know, I was at Virginia Tech. I should know the school population.
That's okay.
But we're it's a really nice campus, and it's I'd say we're a mid-major for sure.
Mid-major, I got you. Okay, gotcha. And you're in Edinburgh, Texas, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay. So
what are some of the majors there at your school, at that campus? What are some of the kids go there? What's the main degree that they get? That's the way I'm trying to ask that, right?
Yeah. So we have you know, a wide range of majors here. We have a lot of kids on our team. They're majoring in engineering. We have education. I have a young lady coming in for fine arts. But one of the interesting things, we have really great graduate degrees as well.
Oh,
and
wow.
Just with the way things are right now, with athletes having kind of like that extra little bit of eligibility, we have a young lady coming in to do a very specific sort of early childhood education degree. And we're one of just a few schools that offer a minor in that. But we also have a med school, and we have a fantastic physician assistance program here as well. So they, you know, they're saying UTRGV is the future of Texas. So there really are a lot of opportunities at this institution.
I had no idea that y'all had a physician assistant or med school. That's awesome.
Yeah, we do. Yep.
So is there a nursing affiliated with the school as well?
I know physical therapy is coming in a couple of years. I'm not sure about nursing.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, gotcha. Gotcha. So someone, someone comes interested in, into the program, they believe in you. What kind of coach are you going to get, be for them? What's your values and what's your core that wants to get out the best in someone?
So I am, I come from a, you know, I've had four coaches in my career. The first, so I walked on as a freshman. I was 18. I came from Trinidad. My first coach was just like nurturing. He just nurtured me and helped me believe in myself. I was throwing probably less than 30 feet. And he would tell me, you can go to the Olympics. You can be an Olympian. And I just said, this guy is nuts. You know? And he just really opened my eyes to the possibility. When I threw 35 feet, I wanted a tattoo. And he really advised me against it. Oh, he said, just write it on your shoe. You're going to throw much further than that. Don't worry. So we really complimented each other because we were both kind of nuts.
Gotcha.
And then I progressed with him. I transferred to the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, where I had my second coach. So my first coach was Gordon Rackley. He's passed away. He was ill, so he retired and he passed me on to Brian King. And Brian King was nurturing, but he also pushed me a little harder in terms of technique and lifting while also encouraging that belief in myself. And with Brian King, I went from being someone who wanted to tattoo 35 feet on my ankle to someone who won NCAAs and qualified for the Olympic Games.
Wow.
And he had to let me know that I'd qualify for the Games. I had no idea. So he was just so much information. He just brought so much information to the table. So I started with someone who was nurturing. Then I had a coach that was very informative. And once I had that standard, Brian passed me on to Greg Jack at Virginia Tech. And Greg Jack is a taskmaster, and he made me work like I'd never worked in my life. And my first year with him, I had the B standard for World Championships. I was not selected, although I was the only person that qualified, and he lit that fire under me. And so this was for the 2003 Games in Paris. So okay. Paris is going on, and we're looking at the qualifying rounds, and he's showing me you should have been in that final, and he's just in my head, like getting me fired up. So with Greg, I went from qualifying to the having the B standard for the Olympics to smashing the A standard, because my Olympic flame is on 100% and nobody's going to stop me from going to the Games. And with Greg, I become an Olympic finalist and a professional athlete, signed with Nike and all that great stuff. After my time with Greg ended, I actually coached myself.
Oh, wow.
So I got to include me.
Yeah.
So I was coaching at Morgan State. I coached myself. I coached myself to Aldo PB. Really started going over 19 meters again and really doing well. Went to the London Games. And I was the first person to miss the finals at the London Games. And after missing the finals, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I sat in my sweats for longer than I should have. I was just beside myself, and I'm in my room in my sweats. I'm sad. And then I, you know, everything comes out about people being suspended, et cetera, et cetera. And so that fire is there again. I was going to retire years before London, but Valerie Adams is like, no, Cleo, you can't retire. You got to hang in there. So after London, I moved back to Trinidad and I started working with Ismael Lopez Mastrapa, who coaches Keyshawn Walker to this day. And he just helped me regain that belief in myself and brought in a new stimulus in my training, where I did more of a Cuban style training versus American style training.
Okay.
Which just meant more throwing than I did previously. So I threw twice a day. Sometimes at the end of the day, I would have thrown close to 100 throws with different size implements. And just really igniting my career. So all of that to say is I would like to be that coach that that athlete needs at that time. If you're my walk-on, I want to be able to say to you, you're going to be great. You can be awesome. Let's work at this one step at a time. But if you're my transfer, then I'm hoping to light that fire in you, letting you know this is your last year. It's, you know, this is when you're going to make it happen. It's now or never. If you're my transfer coming out of Tennessee, who may have had some, you know, some injuries or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, just staying with you, building your belief and building you back up like Coach Lopez did for me in Trinidad. Coaches are my heroes. So I'm just hoping to like give back and maybe one day be like just as impactful as coaches have been in my life.
Oh, wow.
So I have some eligibility left. I think I want to go with her. You got any need for 40-ish, I won't say my age, year old? I don't even know what implement I would throw well, but I want to.
You don't want to coach her. Everything. She's hard-headed.
No. Come on out. The hammer.
Both of y'all can get matching tattoos.
What did you say? I'm sorry.
Here she said, come on out.
Okay. I'm putting you in the hammer. Your shirt says it already.
There you go.
This would be, you'd have to start from ground zero with me in the hammer. Yeah. Discus might be it was my thing years ago, but anyway.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. So,
not to jump and we're going all over different place, but when you were throwing for that long period of time as a professional, you were from like 2002 to 2019, was your mindset after, was that to get into coaching eventually? Is that where you kind of saw yourself going, was into the coaching ranks?
Absolutely. I saw myself definitely getting back into coaching, being a coach, giving back, contributing to athletics. But if not as a coach, as an administrator, but I worked an office job for 2 days and one morning. And
2 days
and one morning.
One morning.
That sounds like a fun story.
I need to be outside, to be around track and field. It's where I'm happiest. So even when I made an attempt at not coaching, I just realized I come alive inside track and field and around athletes. So it's always been an objective for me.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Awesome. So you found where your passion is.
Absolutely.
And sitting at a desk is not it.
Not for the entire day. I gotta. Yeah. I have 4 good hours behind the desk.
Now, on a side subject, will you coach or do you coach? Will you handle the strength and conditioning for your throwers?
This year, my strength and conditioning is being handled by our strength and conditioning coach, Coach Sparks. He is the expert in the area. He's qualified. I'm working towards my CSCS, but I'm going to be very, very involved. And we work together and we put together a program that really helps our athletes to get to the next level.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
But I'm in the weight room every day with my athletes. And it's really a team effort.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, are y'all, and I'm just throwing this out there, are y'all looking to bring long distance runners on? So if a coach hears this and he might be have a connection with a distance runner or sprinters on, are y'all looking to build a whole squad?
Absolutely. We're focusing on our distance team. We're focusing on getting some male throwers in. So the coaches that were here prior to my arrival, they were here a little bit longer, got an earlier jump on recruiting. So we're okay. really going to focus on distance and the throws. But outside of that, if you're a great athlete, if you're a good athlete, you're a good student, we want you. We will find a place for you. Come on down.
Awesome. Okay, good. Glad to hear that. Glad to hear that. All right. So we're going to go back all the way back to the beginning.
Okay.
Where the legend started. So you said earlier you had a coach that kind of, you know, was if you when you was throwing 30 feet, he was encouraging you to throw 35. When did you first kind of pick up a shot put before then? And was it kind of love at first feel when you first saw that shot put? Kind of tell us about that.
Absolutely. So my dad actually, he won a scholarship to come to the U.S. to be an athlete, but he wasn't able to take it. So he had like javelins and shot puts, discus. Oh, wow. They were always implements in my house. The challenge that I had as a young person growing up in Trinidad is that, and growing up in the rural area in Trinidad, is that I did not have exposure to coaches. So if there was a track meet today, you know, the teachers would announce and I would go and compete. And a lot of the times win, some of the times at least be in the top three. So I knew I had some talent for the throwing events. If I'd been guided a little better, maybe I would have thrown the disc or the hammer, who knows? Mm-hmm. But there was always a shot put around and it was just my thing. I just loved it. I would carry shot puts around in my backpack while I was in high school, you know, just in case I ran into a coach, you know, I was ready.
That's awesome. So did your dad show you how to pick it up and hold it, or was it just there and you just kind of said, hey, I'm going to throw this?
So my dad was teaching my sister. My sister is 3 years older than me. So he was teaching her and I was like, kind of like, I want to go. And I had to sit and wait until it was my turn. So eventually I did get some help from him, but when it came to like actually coaching, I don't know. I never looked to my dad to help me. I never thought of him as a coach. I don't know why that is. Probably because he works so much. Yeah. So it's always been around me. My sister and I, we always competed, but it's just the coaching that you can get. If you live in the city in Trinidad, you cannot get that where I am from.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, even right now, there's like no organized track team where I am. So I'm working to try and help develop coaches in Trinidad through my foundation and to help develop athletes as well. So if there's anyone who wants to help with that, let Jason just...
And I was going to bring that up at the end to talk about your foundation and stuff, for sure. But since you go ahead and brought it up, so just tell us again. So Trinidad and Tobago as a country has no government support for their athletics, right?
So I don't know what it is right now. Once I qualify for the Olympics, I receive support from the government.
Okay.
So, but you know, you had to qualify. You had to do that work first. I don't know what the system is right now. It switches and changes, and you know, it really depends on whoever's in charge, and I'm out of the system. But what I want to do is to try and provide grassroots foundation and opportunities for young people so that they have the opportunity to come to the US, study, to make it to the Olympics, and who knows what's next.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, there's anything we can do to help you with that, just feel free to reach out to us for sure. So getting back to the young thrower, do you remember the first time you kind of threw over 40 feet? And would you say as a high schooler, were you strong for your size? Were you powerful, explosive? You know, you said you were kind of drawn to the shot put, but was it, were you naturally an explosive person? Then also too, did you do any other sports as a high school youth?
So as a high schooler, I was never really involved in organized sport, but whenever the opportunity came to compete, I was there. And it's crazy, but that's the way it was. So if there was a competition for basketball, they would organize a team, a poorly, like not a very good team, but I was there. So yeah. I would, whatever sport was outside of swimming, because I was like, that's dangerous. That's where I drew the line. But be it basketball, football, which is soccer here,
yeah.
Drama, dance, any extracurricular. Once again, I was, I think, trying to not be behind a desk. Mm. So any extracurricular opportunity, I was there. Even like as a kid younger than 9 years old, I feel like I could not be remembering correctly, but I feel like I signed myself up for my first track meet, because I realized when you ran, you got like a pack of cookies and some chocolate milk and a medal. I didn't care about the medal, the cookies and the chocolate milk. So
oh, wow.
I was there for that.
So what did that look like growing up? You know, way different, I know, than America, where we've got right. organized kids pay big bucks to. So you said something your teacher would announce. So did they say, hey, yeah. after school today, there's a competition, just go sign up? Is that how it worked?
So it was a lot of who wants to go run? And I ran past the teacher into the direction, kind of like on the spot. Sometimes it was more organized, but when I was younger, I remember like being outside on the recreation ground where we did, there was no Mondo track. It was like a football pitch and yeah. we did everything there. I just remember being there with my friends and maybe the coach who was supposed to supervise us, something happened and we'd just start races on our own and we'd run. And we'd walk over to the jump pit when we felt like jumping and we'd jump and we'd be out there all day playing.
Oh wow.
I'm sure this is not how it was designed, but this is what happened.
Hey, it worked for you.
It worked for you,
it
for
worked.
Sure. When y'all had these competitions, was it what like your town versus a couple of people from a, you know, close other towns, or was it just among, you know, your town that you competed in? As a youth.
So a lot of what I did was through our school. So we okay. had primary and secondary school. So in primary school, it wasn't as disorganized as I'm making it out. But say, for example, someone didn't show up, that's what happened. But a lot of times you'd have just like school sports, which is what we call a track meet.
Yeah.
So school sports at your school. They would divide the school into different houses. Oh. So that's just, so the houses would compete against each
oh,
other.
Okay. Oh. Yeah.
And then if you did well at your school sport, all the other kids who did well at their school sport, they would kind of make a team. And so the PE coaches from other schools would then start coming in and they would work with the kids from the other schools and you work together in this team. And so that team, say that's a regional team, that team will compete against other regional teams. And then they'll select the best regional team and that team will go to nationals.
Oh, wow.
And
oh, wow.
that's how they did it. Yeah. But
did
then-
you get cookies at nationals too? Or did you get more than cookies at nationals?
I don't, you know, there was always food. I was always interested. But it,
I would be in
it was
for some cookies myself.
I know, yeah. It was a lot of fun.
So I'm guessing you worked your way up to that national, going to nationals, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
So I went go ahead. So I went to nationals as a primary school kid and you know, because, so this is how it worked at this primary school level. So when I got to secondary school, that didn't really happen as much in terms of, you know, once you hit secondary school, it's very serious in Trinidad. Like,
okay,
you take an exam, and this exam has a huge impact on the rest of your life and what school you go to, and you're 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of focus, and once you're in secondary school, the focus is very like academic focused. So while I had to maintain grades for my parents and, you know, for myself, I knew that I needed an education. I would say I was more interested in being an athlete than average, like the average student. And so I really try to like push and be able to compete. But usually the students that are interested in being athletes, they join clubs that are external to your school. Okay. And because I lived really far from my school, I couldn't join a club. And my parents did not do sleepovers. So that was... That was my struggle as a secondary school student and athlete, not being able to join a club and be eligible to do things like the Curifta Games, which is regional to the Caribbean. So or the junior level games. I have like no junior level achievement or accomplishments really. So
wow. Wow,
which is probably good.
You were definitely from the grassroots. You were that was at your core. So, what a fascinating story so far. So tell us when did you start getting some college interest? And you said earlier that you went to University of Maryland at Baltimore County, and you were coached by Coach Keene. How did that path come about? How did you first meet him? And then also too, was there any aspirations from any other schools that you were possibly looking at to come into the States?
So I came in on an academic scholarship. I went to HBCU in Baltimore called Coppin State.
Yeah.
And I was there, and, you know, this is a long time ago. So I had like someone help me find housing in Baltimore because I couldn't do it from Trinidad.
Yeah.
So I didn't know how. There wasn't really, you know, internet access or any of that. So this person puts myself and about five other student athletes from students from Trinidad in two apartments. And, you know, he sets us up really nice with furniture and everything. Everything's great. I have an academic scholarship. I'm paying my rent. So I pay my rent for the year and everything is good until my leasing agent starts the process of evicting us, all five of us.
Oh, no.
This guy, I mean, I was scammed before being scammed was a thing. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah, this guy scammed us all. And myself and all of my roommates, we had to dig in our little toolbox and find whatever talent we had to try to find a way to stay in the U.S. So my roommate, she went back to Trinidad, unfortunately. I had another roommate and myself, we walked onto the track team. I had another roommate that did ROTC. I had a roommate who had IT experience, so he worked, and he was Muslim, and sort of like Muslim community kind of like helped him out. So everyone just had to pull out their talents, and that was the talent I could come up with, you know, throwing the shot put. Yeah.
Wow.
If not for that, I would have, like, every day I wanted to do it. Every day I wanted to walk onto the team. And if it were not for that kick in the butt of being evicted, I probably wouldn't have done it. But it became urgent. And I went into that coach's office and I took the chance. So that's how I started.
Wow.
I can laugh now, but I was pissed back then.
Yeah, that, oh, wow.
And basically, so that, what year was that? I mean, what year was this when you first walked into that office? You remember 2000 or 99?
Like a little, yeah, like 99, 98, 99, okay. Yeah.
Okay. And that was the first time you met Coach King then?
No, so I walked in and I met Coach Barrett, mm-hmm. who is now at, I'm going to say Texas A&M, no, at North Carolina A&T.
Yeah, okay.
So I met Coach Barrett and I walk into his office, you know, I pump myself up and I'm like, Coach, I want to throw. And I'm like trying to appear confident. And he's like, how far do you throw? And I'm like, 9 meters. I had not thrown 9 meters. I had exaggerated my distance.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm like, I got to make him think it's good. So I thought 9 meters was good, you know, because
yeah.
I threw 7. I'm like, yeah, 9 meters. And he almost fell out his chair laughing because I was so confident and so bad at throwing. And he said, all right, yeah, man, come on, go ahead. He's Jamaican. And he gave me to Coach Rackley. And Coach Rackley was a decathlete in college. Uh-huh. And we started working together. And every day, the way I was raised is if you have a commitment, you have a commitment. So I never considered not going to practice at practice time. You know, mm-hmm. So every day I just kept going. And then I was on the track team and I got a room in the dorms,
wow.
which was great. And then I was on the volleyball team.
Oh, wow.
What?
Yeah, because Coach Rackley was also coaching volleyball. So I had a season of volleyball and that helped me to really formalize in my mind that I am a single person athlete, because we had the NCAA record for the longest losing streak. And although I had no volleyball skill talent, could not contribute to the team, I would argue and upset my teammates because we were losing. So, yeah.
So
I felt like they were too happy losing. So I didn't like it.
You decided team sport or that team sport was not for you. You needed to focus on you.
Team sport period went out the window at that point. Yeah. Oh. I was like, No team sport.
I'm just sitting here thinking, holy mackerel, you went from walking on throwing 7 to 9 meters to being an NCAA champion in the shot put.
Definitely not 9 meters. No way. 7 to 8.
Yeah. And throwing 17, 16. I don't know if you know this, but there's YouTube videos of you throwing your senior year in high of college.
Right,
you know,
when
you threw the 19 meters at an indoor meet or something like that, and you had a white long sleeve shirt on.
That was my second year post-collegiate. Yeah.
Second year post-collegiate. Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So they actually did not record the best part of that throw, because after I threw that, I like bounced on my bum for like 10 meters once I.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So did Coach, where did the technique start coming in? When did you start learning the technique of becoming a real glider? You know, because, you know, you were fundamentally, you were pretty good from what we can see on YouTube and your technical apparatus. Where did that technique start coming from and how was that developed?
So I would say my first 2 years with Coach Rackley was just so general. He very general and also very specific at the same time, meaning we would just have fun. He would build me up. We would have a good time and just do different activities, which kind of like just demonstrated to me that I have some talent in this area. So we would lift every once in a while and I was stronger than the female athletes. We would run and I would do okay. And he would just whatever we had access to on the day, we would kind of do that. But one thing we did very consistently, because we did not have a throw-in circle or a track at Coppin State, Coach Rackley and I took our 4 kilo shot puts and threw them into the racquetball court. So,
really?
So I would stand at one end and he would say, "You see that line right there? Throw it over that line." And I would just throw into the back panel.
Yeah, the back wall.
Yeah, of the racquetball court. And I always had like a very high strike.
Yeah.
Which some will argue it should have been lower, but that's what it was. So I had a high strike. That's what I learned from Coach Rackley. Like just taking a lot of throws because the shot put would roll right back to us.
Yeah.
And I would throw it. I would throw it into the racquetball court, into the back wall of the racquetball court. And then Coach King, well, Coach Rackley helped me, of course, learn to glide at the very beginning of my career. Coach King took it to another level. He also taught me the hammer and the weight from scratch, which I think really helped with my strength and my speed. And also my weight room became more formalized at UMBC. So I had Coach Cantor as my strength and conditioning coach as well. But also every once in a while, Coach King would take me into the weight room and destroy me. So, but he also took very good care of me. I must say, all of my coaches always like really poured into me. So, I was lucky.
No discus introduction.
Well, Coach King and I had one discus practice. one discus practice. I threw four disci. I threw the discus into the lake behind the circle four times, and that was it. So, yeah. From that point.
It almost lasted as long as your office, your desk job, huh?
Oh, almost. Almost longer, yeah.
Oh, wow. So, what was it like? Did you ever self-reflect and say, man, where you came from as a youth to where you were throwing in college is just a really amazing story. Do you ever self-reflect on that and just kind of say, you know, look where you came from and look what you've done?
You know, to me, it's like, it's what it is. That's my experience. So yeah. I was at World Championships and I attended one of the workshops. Sonia Richards was a speaker at this workshop, and she started with, "At 9 years old, I knew I was going to be an Olympian. I knew I was going to be an Olympic champion. I had great coaches in Jamaica, and then I migrated to the US, and my freshman year, I did." And she was like, "I knew I was going to do this." And in my mind, I was like, well, if she knew, and she was so like, her journey was so clear, then I'm like an accidental Olympian because I never knew. And it was all kind of by accident. But, you know, I just really enjoyed the journey. I had a great time as an athlete.
Well, since I could, not that this guy was a good guy, but the guy that scammed you, whoever that was, you could thank him for.
Well, you know, at this point, I know he knows that I tell this story because I tell everyone.
Yeah.
I tell everyone. But, you know, and that's what I said. It was a terrible thing that happened to me, but right. I made lemonade out of lemons. I cannot make lemons.
You turned into a great thing.
Wow. So you won the NCAA Indoor Championships in 2002 with the throw of 1750. Do you still have a medal?
The Texas Track and Field Coaches Association. Coaches education through our annual winter clinic, the state's number one track and field clinic. Texas Track and Field promotion. Our postseason meet of champions. Lobbying efforts with the state's governing bodies. The Texas Track and Field Hall of Fame. If it involves Texas track and field, we're at the forefront. Join our mission in continuing to make Texas track and field the nation's best.
I don't. Nope.
Give it to your parents?
No, I didn't. I like just along the way, I've lost everything. Like I've lost a bunch of stuff here and there and this move. And
yeah.
I think it's at one of my friends. I think it's in her basement, but I'm not sure. Just moving and being an athlete, just kind of like being on the move. And I always said to myself, when I would look at my medals at the end of my career and kind of like in a silly way, like none of the medals count until I get an Olympic medal. That's kind of like how my mind was. But yeah, I a lot of the stuff my mom has, thankfully, and just a lot of stuff is just in basements across America. And I've forgotten where it is.
Do you remember that day where you won the national championships? And I'm guessing you probably beat, you know, some Power Five schools and girls that had, you know, bigger aspirations and better upbringings than you at the time. Yeah. And you threw, you know, 1750, which is a huge mark, glide shot put as well. So do you remember that day? Was you nervous? Do you have a good warm up?
I remember that day, I would say clearly in some ways, and in some ways I don't remember it. So this was my third time. Well, let me just say, when I walked onto the track team, compliance could not clear me in time for indoor season. And that's how I got that fifth year indoor.
Yeah,
there was no red shirt, none of that. Mm-hmm. So I had this extra indoor season and my coach, Brian, you know, like he just worked on my mental. And so for that season, he tried to find, so this would have been our third time going to NCAAs. This time he got whatever, I don't know how he convinced the AD to allow myself and him to travel to wherever we could find the best shot putters. So the first year I went, everything was new. Everyone was new. And I was an All-American. And they had, you know, that podium where seventh place has a step and eighth place stands on the floor. And I'm at eighth place looking up at everyone. And I'm like, man. So we really worked. We traveled, like, across the country just looking for the best competition we could find. And we didn't lose. We won every meet that indoor season.
Oh, wow.
So the day before the meet, I just remember going to Arkansas and just being really relaxed and chilling with my coach. And I don't recall practicing while we were out there, but maybe we did. I remember my coach asking, and I mean, Brian is like a huge throws coach. And he's just asking me, so let's go to the movies the night before I compete. What do you want to watch? What do you want to see, Cleo? Let's go look at Hannibal. So we're looking at Hannibal, and I'm fine. My 6'3 coach is like, and then we went for ice cream. So Brian knew how to get me to relax. It was just totally relaxed. The next day we went to the track. And I just remember feeling really good, not knowing it. I just warmed up. I was in the first flight. I threw, you know, a high 16. And I remember the year before the girl that won, she threw high 16. So I was like, oh, this is so cool. So I had to go back to the warm-up area and wait for the second flight. Mm-hmm. And I just remember sitting there and praying, literally just praying to make it back to the finals. And that's what I remember most from that day, sitting back there praying that I made it to the finals. And once I made it, it was just like, okay, let's have fun. And that was it. My situation, I would say we were on the lower end of the spectrum in terms of resources, but also lower in terms of stress. So I was wearing my favorite, you know, our teams were issued practice uniforms, like this kind of cotton Russell hoodie and sweatpants. I'd worn them until they had huge holes in the pants, and I'd like cut right here, and you know, I'd put little holes for my fingers. This is what I'm wearing to NCAAs, looking crazy. But I had no idea. Everyone else had like new uniforms and all this. I had no idea. So I was just so comfortable, so relaxed. My coach was great. We had, you know, a rental car. It was just the two of us. We knew each other because we'd been traveling together alone for over a year and a half. You know, whatever I needed, that's what we did. So, you know, it was great. Wow. No pressure. That's what I remember.
Unbelievable. So from there, you find yourself at Virginia Tech. Are you declaring you went pro at this time? Is that right?
Oh no! So
you competed in Commonwealth Games, and then you were at the NACC under 25 in San Antonio.
Yeah.
So were you still with Coach King that time, or were you at Virginia Tech?
So I was in Baltimore hanging out.
Okay,
that's what I was doing.
Hanging out.
I was hanging out. You know, I was living my best life. I was working, graduating, doing all that stuff, doing everything I thought was important, but not really training. I was just, you know, living. You know, Brian and I, we did a little prep for the Commonwealth Games. I went and I did okay. So Brian accompanied me this time to the NACAC in San Antonio, and I did much better in his presence. and you know, Brian, I mean, Brian did that all on his own, you know, just using his own resources, which is just insane. So we did better at NACAC, but then I was just kind of in Baltimore, just wasting away. And Brian put me in his car and he drove me to Blacksburg, which is, 7 hours away. Which was a trip which was made even longer because this is when the DC Sniper was really active and there was traffic. But Brian was like, you're out of here. And he drove me to Blacksburg. We met Coach Jack. We made all the necessary arrangements, went back to Baltimore. And then that January, I went down to Virginia to train full time. I'm not really thinking of myself as a professional athlete, just thinking of myself as someone who wants to go to the Olympics. Yeah. So,
well, you do in 2004.
A couple of years
later. So what was that experience like, the qualifying, and you even went to the World Games that year as well? What was that experience like?
So that year, because I'm doing this kind of like on my own, and even my coaches, it's kind of their first time. I was ranked number 2 in the world going into that competition. But just from lack of experience in terms of traveling and everything else, I didn't do really great. So that then kind of set me up for my outdoor season. And so I was able to focus a little better on how to travel, how to prepare, how to make sure my luggage makes it, you know, all of the things necessary. So I would say really after World Championships, this is my first time seeing and meeting like the top athletes in the world. And I see Yumalini Kumba, who would become the Olympic champion that year. And she goes like this to me. And I'm like, what does that mean? What does that mean? She, is that a threat? What is this? But I think she knew that she knew how good I was at that time. And I didn't know how good. I went into that meet ranked second, but just a lack of experience, and I wasn't able to handle the meet. So then I was much better at the Olympics later that year.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. You made 10th in the Olympics, and then you made the finals in the world championships. You got 8th and stuff.
Yep. I started competing and, you know, just competing for Trinidad while I absolutely love my country. It's again, the resources are not where I would like them to be. So it was always tough, you know, it until 2012, we never had training camps and, you know, that kind of preparation phase for our athletes. So it was always a situation where you flew in very close to when you competed, you can have your coaches there. It was very stressful, very much the opposite of what I experienced with Brian at Virginia Tech. Well, with Brian at UMBC. Yeah, right. Unfortunately.
Gotcha. So if you go watch yourself and you Google yourself on YouTube, have you ever done that?
I have, yes.
Yes, okay.
Too many times, I'm sure.
Plenty time. Well, what I love about you is there's an intensity to your throwing that is just not met in any circle for other females to really throw. Because we coach a lot of youth, and we want them to grunt and to make some noise and effort, and they're so meek and quiet. And you're just, the volume is turned up loud and you're screaming and the ball hits and you're still screaming. Where did that come from? Where did that burning in the belly, where did that fire come from? Is it the youth and the stuff that you've had to prove through the years, or just it was, that's how you are?
Well, I would have to say that a lot of that comes from just overcoming the adversity to just make it to some of these meets.
Gotcha.
Like, so it was a lot of stuff that I had to overcome. You know, I look back on it now, and it's just unbelievable the career I've had in terms of not having any, you know, everyone's like, oh, she's a trailblazer. Yay. Trailblazing is terrible. It sucks. It sucks. So
just a lot of learning. Like I am having to knock down everything.
yeah, absolutely. And you know, I would meet up with Valerie and she's like, Cleo, you need someone to look after you. Like, that's not right. That's not how you do it. Cleo, no. But that's just the way it was. So a lot of the passion, for example, when I qualified for the finals in 2010 at the World Champs in Korea, I was coaching myself and I couldn't believe, you know, on the last throw, the throw was so far over the line. I just felt like I didn't make it. I didn't realize that was a qualifying line. I thought that was a line before the qualifying line. But that's just the person I am, you know. I am a hot Caribbean Trini woman and I'm loud and, you know, I've been taught by my parents, be quiet. So that was my opportunity to use all of that loud, explosive, just let it all out.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
What, you brought Valerie up. What was it like competing against Valerie Adams, Michelle Carter, you know, some of the greats that have stepped into the ring? I can't even name them all, but what was it like to compete against some of those? Did you ever throw against Connie Price?
One time. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was a monumental occasion. Once again, like I said, Brian and I, we traveled the country looking for the best meets, and he took me to Mount Sac Relays. And he's like, Connie Price is going to be there. Connie Price is going to be there. Connie Price. And so I get there and I'm like, it's Connie Price. And she's so amazing. And I'm like, just sitting looking at her. And I'm like, I can't believe this lady is so great. You know what I mean? And here you are competing against, you know, the your idols. Like, you know, it was amazing. So that was amazing. She was so nice. Like, just to see her in action, and I'd been looking at her video, like her cassette tape with Brian Oldfield, and put it in the VHS, and you know, to that was the only one. There was no YouTube, so I'm just looking at her over and over and looking at that video, and here she is. So that's amazing. And then, you know, I start off competing, and Valerie's here. And I'm like, we're both like, we're competitors. And then we're in Brazil and we're like, and then, you know, we're in Germany and we're kind of like, we like the same things. I like you. You're great. No, do this. Let me help you with this. No, do this. Come, let me braid your hair. Let's go practice together. It's just better together. Even when you're competitors, you know, I have to say, because of Valerie, I stuck with it longer and I was better at it because of her. And did hopefully go ahead.
Did she reach out to you before she retired? Did you talk to her about her retirement? Did y'all talk?
We talk all the time. Yeah. All the time. Yeah. Oh, you know, wow. Valerie's journey is incredible. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of stuff to celebrate her retirement. I don't know what she's putting out there, but there's going to be stuff to celebrate her. And yeah, it's going to be great. I think the throwing world is really going to enjoy whatever they're going to have planned for her. It's going to be fantastic.
Wow. Awesome. Now I have a question. So getting back to Connie Price and you watching those tapes. So I've seen your videos. I love your technique. Did you copy her? Because in the back, when you come into double support and that left leg hits the ground, and then you push off that right and you get really long extension with that left leg. Yeah. Is that where that came from?
I think so. I think that's what Brian and I, we really worked on that. But more so, I think I just absorbed from constantly looking at the video. I didn't say to myself, I'm gonna try to be like Connie, because I'm 5'7" and Connie is 6'7". Yeah, she's a lot taller than me. Yeah. But just seeing how it's done, seeing the steps, seeing how it's done, and just kind of like looking. But also, I really loved Brian Oldfield and his whole, you know, throw the shot put through the sky, and I love to scream and I love to fall. That was really great for me.
So with that being said, did anybody ever try to teach you the rotational shot put?
No, not never, really. Okay. Not,
never even talked about in those long drives with you and you and Coach King. Never.
No. And there were times when I said, hey, Coach, let me spin. And they're like, no, Cleo, you just glide. And that's how it was, even as a pro. And, you know, when I started moving into higher level throwing, there would be gliders and maybe one or two females that spun, but we all glided. And I think when I asked my coaches to spin, I think it was probably a joke. I never had like a real strong desire, but now I love how the spin is evolving with Krauser. And I would now, like, I would seriously like to spin like that.
That
style of spinning, I think I could get behind.
Now you were throwing during that time. What do you think happened that had that transition from the glide almost becoming taboo a little bit? But, and then we're getting so caught up in the rotational now, especially on the men's side. There's still a lot of, you know, female gliders out there, but not as much during your time. What was the big, what do you think kind of flipped the switch to everybody's got to be rotational?
I think it was at some point, you know, collegiate coaches in the U.S. So this is what I suspect. This is just in my mind.
Yeah.
We had a generation of coaches who went from gliders to spinners. And then we had a generation of coaches who spun. They kind of started either very early as spin, you know, in the rotational technique, yeah, or they started as rotational throwers. And yes, when that generation of coaches kind of came in, we had more females doing the rotational technique. But for a very, very long time, you know, you would go to a track meet and there would be one or two girls or women that would use the rotational technique. And what we really liked about it is that the glide is so stable. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So someone using the rotation, she could come out of nowhere and maybe get you one day. But yeah, if it rains a little bit, or if there's a little dust in the circle, we just mm-hmm. felt so stable in the glide. But I think that but I think the rotation has also evolved a lot.
So. Gotcha. Great answer. So from 2002 to 2019, you traveled the world as a thrower.
Yeah.
And you're not making a lot of money, and right, you know, you're not a billion-dollar athlete and have Gatorade commercials and stuff right, like that. How did you survive? You know, mm-hmm. and then also too, how many passports did you go through?
Listen, I have to say, so I signed with Nike in 2004, and I had a great year, and I didn't get, my contract wasn't extended or anything. I was so sad, but that really lifted me out of poverty. You know, it was not a huge contract, but it was, you know, enough to, like, I can buy food. I was at a point where I'm post-collegiate now, I'm training, and Brian is like, check your bank account, Cleo. And he would send me $25. And I'll be like, oh my God, let me buy some spaghetti and some meat and make a huge pot and cook that for the, you know what I mean? And that yeah. white shirt with the stripe, Brian yeah. sent that to me in a care package with like a bunch of Under Armour stuff. And this is when the brand was, you know, he's in Baltimore, and this is when the brand is new and all of yeah. that. So my parents, my friends, it was a lot of, you know, my very close community. When I went to Virginia Tech, Brandi Smith let me live with her for free, and Denise O'Connell let me live with her for free. So, and I didn't know these girls. They were strangers. And they were like, oh, you're training for the Olympic? Me too. Let's just live together. So it's crazy when you think of it. So that's how I survived at that period. Once I made it to the Olympics, I qualified for elite funded in Trinidad. And that helped a lot in terms of, you know, getting there. So between just the funding that we got from Trinidad and competing on the circuit, I was able to survive that time. And up until, you know, through the pandemic. So I was still into 2020, I was training yes. and getting ready. You know, for the 21 games, and I knew I wasn't like in real shape or anything like that, but I was gonna, you know, have a nice ending to my career in Tokyo. But even through that, you know, I lived very frugally, and I tried, and Trinidad really supported me. You know, once I had the standard at that time, it helped a lot. So that's how we did it. Wow. I remember going to track meets and, you know, just kind of doing a tally after the meet and saying to myself, yeah, you lost money. You won the meet, but you lost money.
Wow.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, the prize money didn't cover the expenses. But, you know, those were like the smaller meets in the Netherlands. And you get beer as a prize and flowers and chocolates and a little prize money. And everyone is so happy you're there. You know, those were great meets as well.
Wow. Wow. So, all right. So I have to ask, because when did you start wearing the hat? Because that's kind of, you were known for the hat in the ring.
Yeah.
You know, you had the elbow sleeve sometimes all on, the wrist wrapped up. You know, and you were slamming that left foot down and that ball was popping out like it was nothing.
Yeah. Oh man, the hat. When, you know what? So in 2012, I moved to Trinidad.
Okay.
And I don't know what you know about Trinidad. But
not that much.
It is a tropical island with a capital T. And the sun is blazing at 7 a.m. until like 6 p.m. And it's very humid and it's like very difficult to train outside. So I started wearing a hat to practice every day. Mm-hmm. Every day I would wear that hat. And that became like my little security blanket.
Really?
Yeah, it really did. Like, so sometimes, so there were moments in my career at a big meet, I would look up and I would see the crowd. And my legs would be like that.
Yeah.
And so I'm wearing the hat every day to practice. And I say to myself, well, I just feel so comfortable with this hat. So then I started, I went to a track meet and I wore the hat. And I realized that I could not see.
You put it down real low.
Yeah, I put it, I could not see the crowd. I couldn't see. And that helped me to like control my nervous energy. And because of that, I kept the hat and the sunglasses. It was a hat and sunglasses. And that was my security blanket. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Now, did you wear a weight belt every once in a while too to throw in?
Yeah. It depended on what was going on physically. So I went to the Pan American Games in Brazil one year and I threw, like I had no sense and I blew my elbow. Like I did something to my elbow. And so I went back to Virginia Tech and I'm like, I can't move my elbow. And, you know, they did all this stuff to me and they're like, well, try this sleeve that the football players wear. And I'm like, okay. So I wore that for a long time.
Yeah.
And then something happened and I'm like, I can't move my back. And they, you know, they put me together and they were like, well, wear this weight belt when you throw, and my wrist and my fingers. And yeah, so none of that was style. That was all function.
Well, you had a distinct look and that was your look, and I love that look. I thought it was cool. Like, what's like so many people wear hats now,
right,
in the ring and stuff since they changed the rule. You were kind of the trends. You were the trailblazer in wearing hats.
I think so, because I mean, I remember, you know, wearing the hat and one thing that I felt at some point in my career, I felt like, you know, I have to try and like be. So, okay, I'll tell you guys what happened. What happened is I wasn't sponsored for a long time. And I asked an agent, why am I not sponsored? I'm like, I'm in the top 10 in the world. I don't understand why no company wants to sponsor me. You know, I'm doing better than ever. And he said, Cleo, you know, people would rather watch the women's high jump because they're cute, the outfit, all of that. So I'm like, okay, I got to try and like not just show up looking like I rolled out of the bed. So I tried... So I wore a little makeup
and
it was
fun.
It was fun for me too, you know. Then I really got crazy with the lipstick.
Yes.
You know, I was training in Trinidad and one day I had something that looked like abs and I was like, oh, well, let me show these off.
So
but I was also, it was hot in Trinidad, so I couldn't really train with a t-shirt. And it just developed into a look. And I started having fun. I realized the sponsored athletes had a uniform and they had to wear this. And I, although I wanted to be sponsored, I didn't have a uniform, so I could wear what I wanted to wear. And that's what I did. So I remember the first time I kept the hat on, you know, everyone was like, you kept the hat on for the entire track meet. I can't believe you kept the hat. You kept the hat. And it was like a thing. And I was like, oh, yeah, no one really competes. So
you would even wear it indoors. So you'd wear the hat indoors.
It was because there were people back there indoors. The hat. The hat was for the people. It was for like,
I love it.
Yeah. Started off with the sun and then it went to like my security blanket.
Love absolutely. It. That's awesome. That is
it's
cool.
Like, it was like blinders on a horse.
Yeah. Really.
That's how I thought of it.
Kids to wear hats.
Definitely more people to wear hats. That's
yeah,
awesome.
It kept me focused. It kept my focus.
Let me ask this first. Okay. All right. I got two technical questions. Beginning of your career, your elbow was really high and out.
Right.
Later part of your career, elbow down, kind of underneath a little bit.
Yeah.
Tell me, was the change because of the injury?
No. So the change was, that came from changing coaches, switching coaches. Okay. So Brian had me very traditional back here.
Yeah.
And when I moved to Virginia Tech and I started working with Coach Jack, he moves my shot put here. And if you look at Timmerman, that's where his shot put is. And we kind of switched up the glide to like a more that style of gliding.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's and just like really dynamic. So it was the shot put was here and there was a big stretch here, back here.
Yeah,
and
your left arm.
Yeah, very dramatic arm, left arm out and stretch this way, stretch that way. So there was a lot of stretching and then snap it in the middle and then another stretch. That's what it was.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
So what was the cue with your shoulder in the shot put? Because with you said it earlier, and I'm guessing because you threw in that racquetball above that line, man, your shoulder comes around and that ball is just flying out, but it looks like the shoulder is just bringing that ball around. Was there a cue that you used?
So with my, I have to say that must be where the talent was, where the talent and Coach Jack's idea came together. We just spent so much time working my stand and throw and just here, boom, 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 that stand and throw over and over. And then also the reach, I would reach and reach. So it's almost like I could reach and then hinge my shoulder like even more.
Okay.
If that makes sense. And the cue was to keep your right high, to keep your left high and your right higher.
Yes.
So I always pushed like that.
Gotcha. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you'd watch it. And tell me if I'm wrong, because some videos you can't see. Your shot put was always straight down the sector, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We always hit down the middle. Down the middle or a little
left,
like slightly left of middle, but mostly just down the middle,
So it was a true,
very linear.
It was a true linear movement from the back of the ring through the ring to the ball coming out of your hand. And there was a reaction. The ball reaction was straight, like a catapult.
Straight. Yeah, straight and very straight. And so the shot is here to keep it in that straight line.
Yes.
Because if you put it here, you kind of have to go around.
Exactly.
So everything is down and straight. And instead of moving around, I'm going up and over.
Up and over. Yeah. And I would see that because and the reason I bring that up, and I'm sure as you get more involved in Texas, you'll see this. We have people teaching the glide almost with a rotational finish a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's not that true linear glide of up and over. It's more of a little rotational type finish with a glide movement almost. And the shot put's always going right sector line, or they throw out of the bounds all the time. And I watched this over and over. It's a pet peeve of mine. And I'm like, well, the ball's not going where it needs to go because it's reacting to what he's doing in the ring or what she's doing in the ring and stuff like that. So I just wanted to ask you that because you're a pioneer with glide shot put. And you have one of the probably the best arm strike of anybody in the world when it came to glide shot put. So I had to ask, you know, what was the rationale behind it? For sure. So first, thanks for giving me that now. So I'm going to use that.
Absolutely. And it's just really about keeping your athletes straight, that trying to keep the shot in that straight line and using your legs and then almost like a, you know, a cartwheel. Almost,
Open over. I give a catapult analogy. The catapult. For sure. Yeah. Wow. So when's the last time you threw? Don't tell me today.
Okay. So the last time I thought about throwing was today. Every day
It's still in you.
I can't get it out. It's a problem. I might need to go to therapy or something. But, every day I want to convey to my athletes is, this is the best thing. You're doing the best thing ever. what I mean? I would switch with you like this and just try to get them to enjoy it. But the last time I really threw was just after March 2020 until they closed Trinidad down for you know who, and I couldn't. It's a very sad way to end my career, but that I tell people it took a pandemic.
to make me stop. So, do you think if it didn't happen, you'd still be growing?
No, my plan was to retire after Tokyo, but I had been literally retiring since Beijing.
Okay.
And Valerie would just be like, no. I've been since then. So, but I was like, it's done after 2020. I would have been done.
Gotcha. Did you watch the Worlds here in Oregon? Did you see what Chase Easley did and some of those girls? Did you watch that?
So I was very lucky in that I was there. Val was there and I met her there. And we were there and it was amazing. It's great to see this generation of athletes. They're so much like we were and they're so different from us, you know? And it's just fantastic. We ran into Kara Winger and she competed while we were competing. And, you know, I was just so excited for her and just like over the moon. On her last throw, everyone's clapping and I'm praying. I'm like, oh, and I'm not that religious. I'm not that, but I'm like, whoa. I'm one of those, you know, call me when so when she did it, I like jumped and Valerie and I, we were like in VIP, not being Porsche, just like, So it was fantastic, you know. USA Track and Field should really be proud because it was really a spectacular event, an absolute spectacle in the best sense of the word. And I'm so proud of the throwers, especially, you know what I mean? And especially on the ladies' side, because it's just, it was great, amazing. I love it.
Yeah. they keep pushing the mark. Those girls are pushing the mark. It keeps them going and going. And Chase is leading the way. And you know you got the Dongmo man.
Yeah.
You know she's an unbelievable glider as well. Yeah. So you got there's a lot of talent. The girl from Canada, Sarah Minton, and then you got the girl from Netherlands. They're up and coming and they're young too. They're young.
Young and you know. I must mention Kristen Heaston because I don't know if you remember Kristen, you know, there was a long time and she was really an advocate. And I think a lot of, she went through a lot and a lot of the programs that would develop during her time, and kind of like what you, I don't know what USA Track and Field is doing, but I think just recognizing what we need as athletes. And, you know, the success of Oregon didn't happen in 2020 or 22, 23, you know, it didn't happen. It's been like a plan and something that's been happening for some time. So it's really great that USA Track and Field has invested in the women's throws. I remember being invited to developmental meets for the shot put, and you know, USA Track and Field bringing me in to compete against Michelle and Kristen, yeah, you know, at a time when meet directors were not hosting the women's shot put.
Yeah.
So a lot was really done to develop the event, and now these are the fruits. So it's great. I'm happy to have been a witness to that.
Awesome. Tell us about your foundation real quick.
So it's a foundation that really promotes sport and education, and just trying to get the young kids in Trinidad and Tobago who are talented, who may not be as academically inclined, or who may be academically and athletically inclined, understand that I wasn't the smartest, I was not the best athlete, but I could find a school that would take me and help me develop as an athlete, give me an education. I have, you know, with a lot of help from my friends and everyone else, I have 2 degrees. And now, you know, I qualify to be a coach. And I continue with my education. I just finished the USA Track and Field course today with Larry Judge, which was amazing. So yeah, like, I just want to promote education through sport, because I think that if it weren't for education and sport, I wouldn't be Cleo. And so just giving those opportunities to those girls from like my village to try and help coaches, help develop coaches who can help them, provide them with implements, equipment, whatever they need to do the do. Because for me, it was so stressful when I couldn't throw, because I just knew that's what I was supposed to do. So we've helped athletes in terms of like in the pandemic get food. We've helped para athletes with some of their braces and stuff. So it's just myself and my family, my friends, and we just try to help out as much as we can.
Do y'all have a website or like something on social media we can follow or tag on?
I have just an Instagram page, and I need to do something to try. And I'm very nervous to ask people for money because, okay, you know, I respect people and their money. But at some point, I have to fundraise, because it's kind of been through what I can afford with family and friends and that sort of stuff. But for the type of work we want to do, I need to like reach out to the wider community. So if we can just link to my Instagram, and you know, I'll grow from there. Yeah.
Okay. We'll link it into that so much. Cleo, you were amazing.
I'm a mess.
I love everything about you.
Thank
you. I love everything about you. How are you liking the valley? Have you tried barbecue in the state of Texas?
I haven't had any barbecue, but I have had a lot of tacos.
And where you are, that's some good Mexican down there.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, Mexican food, there's a lot of cilantro in there.
Yeah.
What you don't know is that in Trinidad, we have something called culantro or shadow benny for the Trinis. And we put that in everything, literally. Okay. I put it in everything, and then I sprinkle it on everything. So when I get to these tacos and it has that cilantro, I'm like, oh. So I haven't gone past the Mexican food. I am still.
Okay.
Yeah, but I did have some barbecue sausage and some other stuff outside of this area, but the food in Texas is amazing. I love it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we need to talk to Hicks. I'm going to invite you to one of my practices. So when you come to Dallas, Fort Worth, I'm going to take you to some barbecue.
Awesome. I'd love
my
that.
Treat. My treat. Oh. For sure. You got to wear the white hat, though.
Yeah,
yeah. And the red
lipstick
and the glasses.
Yeah, and me screaming. at the checklist.
Yeah, for sure.
So much fun.
Well, thank you so much for being on. If there's anything we can do for you, just feel free to reach out. You have our contact information, and we're going to try to promote this and get some kids down there for you to recruit. Thank you so much, ma'am. God bless you. Keep doing what you're doing. And thank you for giving back to the kids. You didn't have to come back into coaching, and you know, you could have retired and maybe got a desk job.
No, she couldn't have.
I know, I'm joking. But you know, you're the kind of people that needs to grow track and field and making, because what your story is the epitome of what we're trying to do in the state of Texas, but in the U.S. for growing the sport. And your story can motivate people when they hear this and give them hope.
I hope so. Yeah.
Because we have the stereotype that these kids are, you know, got to be 5-star athletes and, you know, be on this Instagram and be recruited by these D1, and I'm not going to walk on because it's beneath me. And, you know, heaven forbid, if I can't pay my rent, my mom and dad will pay it for me and all this type of stuff.
Right.
You know, they don't understand how to deal with adversity. And I think we're trying to maybe, you know, a little tough, not tough love, but rough love will help them out. So, for sure. So, well, thank you.
Thank you, guys. I certainly appreciate it. Ciao.
Thank you.
Bye.
Wow. What an amazing story. We would like to thank Cleo. Yeah, but Coach Burrell, too, at UT Rio Grande Valley. Hey, Coach Hicks, UT Rio Grande Valley, what a perfect hire you made. What amazing story. What inspiration is she going to give young throwers to lead that throwers group down there in Edinburgh? Just amazing. And the perseverance, the willingness to be great, the passion to go out and throw from 2002, you know, to in Europe, to come to the States to throw in 2019 in Peru, just unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
She walked on because she needed somewhere to live.
Yeah.
She walked on the track team because she needed somewhere to live and said, I can throw 9 meters.
Yeah. And also, too, what you know, throwing's also about connections, and the coach-thrower connection is a bond like no other. And shout out to Coach King. Yeah. Because if he wouldn't have drove her around and they wouldn't have spent all that time together and he wouldn't invested in her. And sometimes too, it just takes someone believing in you and seeing something in you that other people don't see. It just takes one person. And I think definitely he did that for Cleo. And then Coach Jack of Virginia Tech was able to do that as well. And just what a tremendous story.
When you said the community, just think of all those professional throwers like Valerie that connected with her and helped her, and because she didn't know what she was doing. She was doing it by herself most of the time. And people who helped her get to where she is, the people she lived with, just everybody that helped make her career what it was.
Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. And I really would love to go throw for her, all the things she talked about. Wanting to be that type of coach for her kids that come in there. They are getting a gift. If you move down to the valley, you're in throw. You are getting an amazing coach.
Yeah. And she's taking what her coaches instilled in her and paying it forward in the coaches, in the kids that she's going to coach. And it's just going to kind of repeat itself. And also, too, UT Rio Grande Valley Medical School, PA school. That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. So definitely things are coming up down there in Edinburgh. So Coach Burrell, we thank y'all. We'll see y'all down the road. Y'all take care.
All right. We want to thank our sponsors real quick. Texas Track and Field Coach Association. Go to ttfca.org. Look up all the meets for the upcoming indoor stuff and outdoor season. Mm-hmm. Fourthrows.com. Quality Implements Press Rock. Use the code TALKINGTHROWS10 to get 10% off. Porta Circle, porta-circle.com. Again, use the code TALKINGTHROWS10 to get 10% off. If you're in the Austin area, Ready Up AD, Zach Phillips, always great stuff going on with his athletes. Follow him on Instagram or Facebook.
Hello, Talking Throws Texas podcasters. I'm Bruce Caldwell. I'm here today to introduce the Fiber Sport Discus. Yes, many of you thought I only made great vaulting poles. I have been bringing quality discuses to the thrower's hands for over 40 years. first as Cantabrian USA representative, then for the past 10 years as the Nelco discus distributor. I introduced the yellow-plated discus for the plastic's best durability. If your FiberSport discus breaks, we replace it. Our studies have reached into the science of using a wind tunnel and adding microchips to the discus to find the spin, the gravity, the flight stability of the discus. We have found it's not about rim weight anymore. It's more about creating a balanced stability to allow the discus to fly and surf the wind. Our new FiberSport discus is made to be selected to fit your needs, no matter the weather, no matter the conditions. Check out our discus selection guide at FiberSportDiscus.com and find a dealer in your area that sells our fine product. Thank you, Jason Janelle, for allowing me to talk with your listeners on Talk and Throws Texas Style.
Facebook, and then check out the Throwing Factory if you want lessons, kind of get a jump on your season. You know, want some lessons right now. We'd love to.
Also youth lessons.
Yes, if you got some kids who want to throw. I had a friend reach out to me. Her 9-year-old boy shows some interest. So get some lessons, you know. You don't know what they can do. Maybe they can grow, pick up something and throw it. So follow us on YouTube. Listen to this on Apple Podcasts.
And then Lifting DFW. Go to liftingdfw.com. We're getting a commercial edited, and it'll be out here probably hopefully in a week, and we'll get that up on the site and hopefully start selling some trailers. So
awesome. You guys have a good one.